Amen and amen. You guys can be seated. Glad y'all are here today. I think we need to all gang up and go after the person that took away our hour last night, because I want it back. I want that paid back to me tenfold. We got a little girl at home who likes to go to bed pre-time change at around 11 o'clock. And so guess who was up to party last night? And so when it was actually 12. But I'm glad you're here, and glad you're here online as well. Those of you who are watching, I'm glad you're joining us. So we're in this series called Prayer That Makes a Difference. And the series really birthed from a place in my heart and the leaders' hearts here at the church of wanting to have prayer lives that were not just things that sounded good to other people, or that something we felt like we just had to do to be a good Christian, because I really believe, and I hope you believe, that prayer is one of the most powerful things and one of the most precious things that God has given us. Yet it's also one of the most misunderstood things, one of the most misused things. And so for all of us as Christian believers, I think there's a lot to be learned and a lot to glean specifically from Scripture about what prayer is. And last week, if you didn't get a chance to watch that, we talked about how prayer is supposed to be personal, and that we're not praying from far off, you know, spirit. We're praying to Father. That's how Jesus, I'm cutting out for a second. That's how Jesus called us to pray to Him as to Father, as Father, not as, you know, God far away, but as Father. Well, today, we're going to talk about a principle of prayer that is super important, but is often often overlooked. And to get us there, I want to first talk about this principle of adulthood that none of us like, but we all understand what it is and its implications in our life. And it's this. It's the principle of delayed gratification, right? Delayed gratification. Who here wakes up in the morning and thinks, I just can't wait to hold off all good things for later? Like, no, like we want it like now. Matter of fact, in our culture, if we were to really think about it, we're so tuned into having things now that sometimes now isn't even fast enough. Like there needs to be a new now called like now. Like I want things right now, not like now in a minute, like absolutely right now. Matter of fact, if you think about it, like this is the worst thing that can ever happen, because we've been trained to do this. Have you ever been on your phone and all of a sudden you see it drop from 4G to 3G? Oh, horrors. This is going to take forever to load this website. I can't refresh my Facebook feed, because we're so tuned into having things quickly and fast. Like some of y'all in the room can remember dial-up. Y'all remember that stuff? It was terrible. Beong, yong, yong. Right, and then it would kick off halfway through because your mom's friend was calling and you're like, Ma, get off the phone, I'm trying to get on the internet. It was terrible. And so back then, it was, you know, now was a lot slower, but in today's world, we want it now. I think that was one of the biggest struggles of even this pandemic. There was a time when, get this, Amazon would not deliver to my house in 2 days or less. Ridiculous. In 2021, that's obscene. Pandemic or not, right? Because we want things now. But we all understand, though, as adults, we can have the conception that delayed gratification is important. And a good illustration of this is, if I were to give you $10 today, and I said, all right, now you can spend this now, or you can save it, I'll give you $10 tomorrow. Some of us, depending on personality and preference and discipline, a lot of us would be like, what can I buy with 10 bucks? Right? Now, some of y'all be like, I'm going to save it. And there's a whole other end to that. But most of us struggle with delayed gratification. It's why we have to outthink ourselves into the future, because honestly, if given the option, we want it now. But delayed gratification has a compounding effect too, doesn't it? There's another layer that if you delay gratify enough, you can get a better goal. Losing weight. What is losing weight? It is delayed gratification, isn't it? What is saving money? Saving money is delayed gratification. So there's a spiritual component that a lot of us are missing out on, specifically when it comes to prayer. And that's what we're going to look at today, is the idea of delayed gratification when it comes to our prayer life. So to get us started, I want to go ahead and jump into our story out of 1 Kings 18, starting in verse 41, and let's read this together. It says, Elijah said to Ahab, go up, eat, and drink, for there is the sound of a rainstorm. So Ahab went to eat and drink, but Elijah went up to the summit of Carmel. He bent down on the ground and put his face between his knees. Then he said to his servant, go up and look toward the sea. So he went up, looked, and said, there's nothing. Seven times Elijah said, go back. On the seventh time he reported, there's a cloud as small as a man's hand coming up from the sea. Then Elijah said, go and tell Ahab, get your chariot ready and go down for the rain so the rain doesn't stop you. In a little while, the sky grew dark with clouds and wind, and there was a downpour. So Ahab got in his chariot, went to Jezreel. The power of the Lord was on Elijah, and he tucked his mantle under his belt and ran ahead of Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. So to have some context of this story, because that probably doesn't mean a whole lot to a lot of us here, and so we need to understand why this event even happened. How did it transpire? So in this day and age, there was a king named Ahab, and he was the king over the people of Israel. And of course, the people of Israel, as we all know, were the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they were the chosen, picked out people of God, meant to be representations of Yahweh to the rest of the world, to the pagan cultures. But Ahab, as king, and many kings would do this, had a marriage to a woman from another culture, to a pagan place, often for allies and such things. And so he married this woman named Jezebel. And so Jezebel worshipped another god, not Yahweh, the god of the Israelites, but another god named Baal, B-A-A-L. And Baal was thought by his worshipers to be the god of the rain and of the harvest and of reproduction and kind of like of life. And so Jezebel brought in and began to really bring in and institute a new way of worship into the Israelite people. And so as her influence grew, so did the worship of Baal in the Israelite kingdom. So then one day, as it was beginning to get more and more worship, Elijah, God's prophet, God would often speak through prophets in this day and age, and they were kind of like preachers who would proclaim the word of God to the people, to the king, all that kind of thing. God spoke to Elijah, and Elijah went to King Ahab. He said, Ahab, buddy, this isn't good. The people are being pulled from Yahweh, the true God, the God that made us a nation, the God who has protected us and blessed us, and they are beginning to worship Baal because of your wife. And so Elijah said, so because of that, God is going to attack you, God is going to pull from you the very thing that you're attributing to Baal. And so God has decreed that there will be no rain in the land for a certain amount of time. Whatever, Elijah, you crazy fool, go on off of here. Well, as it so happened, for 3 years, there was no rain. Now, in our world right today, like we kind of understand the idea of a drought, right? Like we have lived in times of dryness. If you have a friend that's a farmer or you are a farmer, you understand the devastation that can happen when there's little to no rain. But even in our world, we have reservoirs and we have pipes that go down deep and pull the water up and sprinkle on the fields. But we all understand the fact of if we don't water a plant in our house, what does that plant eventually do? It will die. Because water, rain, is life even to us today. Well, back then, that absolutely applied even more so. And so a devastating drought, to say the least, came across the land. People were starving. People were looking to the king. They were looking to the ruling class of what to do, all the while praying to the false god. And you know what's interesting when you think about this? This is just a side note. Is that it's easy to look at a culture like that and say, oh man, they are so foolish about worshiping this idol named Baal. Of course, don't they know that there's scientific processes that bring about rain and droughts and all that kind of stuff? But here is a quick important tip. We all, still today, have idols. Now, we don't call them that, but we definitely have things that we place in important places in our heart over God. And sometimes those things are a little more intangible. It could be status or money, or our job, or our looks. And so sometimes, oftentimes, God will remove his blessing while you are pursuing this thing, not to punish you, but to leave you to your own end. Because serving this idol and attributing it its power to God, honestly, is an insult to the real God who brought it about in the first place. And so we all need to be careful, and every single day, we need to be going before the Lord and saying, Lord, what is it? What are these things that I am constantly wanting to put in place of you in my life? Because that is an idol. And God will allow you to serve that idol, but he will also allow you to suffer the consequences of that as well. So back to the story. 3 years. Famine was intense. Finally, at the end of 3 years, Elijah meets back up with Ahab. He says, Ahab, listen, God has decided that it's time for this to end. So I want to do, I want to challenge you and your God, me and my God, to a showdown, a pay-per-view event. It's going to be epic. So meet me on Mount Carmel, and we're going to do this thing. So they did. They went up, and they met on Mount Carmel. So Elijah was just Elijah and his servant, his plus one, and it had the prophets of Baal, 450 so odd prophets, you know, the whole people of everybody that could come and watch. Everybody showed up to watch this event. Everybody against Elijah, Baal against God. And so they go up to the mountain, and Elijah decides that what they're going to do is they're going to set up two sacrifices, and the God that comes and lights the sacrifice on its own will be the true God. Like, right, this is epic stuff. Like, I want to see this in real life, right? And so the prophets of Baal, they start first, and man, they're pulling out all the stops, and they're hollering out, and they're calling out, and they're dancing and doing whatever weird stuff the Baal worshipers would do. Eventually, as the day went on and nothing happened, they even begin to cut themselves and mutilate themselves, trying to display their intense sacrifice, their intense devotion to the God of Baal. But guess what happened? Nothing. Matter of fact, Elijah, and I think Elijah was, he kind of get a little aggravated with this thing, right? He hadn't had any rain either. You know, sometimes when that happens, even the people of God have to go through hard stuff too. I don't know if you knew that or not, but sometimes we have to go through hard seasons too. So even Elijah's like, I'm ready for this thing to be over. He begins to taunt him, like, maybe he can't hear you. He literally says, this is in the Bible, he says, well, maybe he's using the bathroom, right? Like, there's no greater insult. Like, maybe your God's just busy. Maybe his tummy hurts or something. I don't know. But eventually, their time ends. It's Elijah's turn. So Elijah builds an altar, puts the wood on top, puts the sacrificed animal on top. But then he does something weird. So in our world today, if it hasn't rained in a while, what do you have to be very careful doing? Starting a fire. Like, we even have like no burn things, right? Like, don't burn anything in your woods or at your house, because it could set the forest and all on fire, right? So we understand the principle that very dry things, no rain in 3 years, I bet you look at that thing hard enough, it would catch on fire, right? So the Elijah does something really weird. He gets the most important resource you can have in a famine. It's not gold, it's not silver, it's water. And he gets a lot of it. And he says, I want you to get this precious water and soak this sacrifice. Now, I don't know if any of y'all are Boy Scouts out there, but I don't think it takes a Boy Scout to know that wet wood doesn't light. Have you ever tried to light a fire when it was raining? No, because it's foolish. You don't do that. It doesn't light. It just makes a bunch of smoke. But Elijah takes the most precious thing and he soaks the sacrifice down. And then this is what he prays. 1 Kings 18, verse 36, is at the time of offering the evening sacrifice, the prophet Elijah approached the altar and said, Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, today let it be known that you are God in Israel and I am your servant, and that at your word I have done all these things. Answer me, Lord, answer me, so that this people will know that you, the Lord, are God, and that you have turned their hearts back. So if you read the story before, you know this is the moment. And so out of heaven, literally out of heaven, out of the sky, a pillar of fire so intense comes down, hits the sacrifice, consumes the sacrifice, consumes the wood, consumes the rock, and even laps up the water. It was awesome. Now, when I read that story, and I've read it a lot, that's the kind of prayer, that's the kind of answer that I want God to answer my prayer with. Like, am I right? Like, if you are honest with yourselves, especially those of us who are instant gratification people, how many times have you prayed for something, and often a very good thing, whether it was somebody that was sick, whether that was a financial issue, whether it was for somebody else or for yourself, like, we want God, like, God, move from heaven, rend the clouds in the sky open and answer my prayer. Like, I've even prayed, like, Lord, right now, this very moment, I want to see you move, and then you open your eyes and there's nothing. And so I think there's maybe a problem because we read these stories, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of other stories. I'm always reminded of the one in the New Testament where I think it was Peter and John, and they're walking to the temple, something they did every single day. This is after Jesus had already ascended. And they're just walking, and they see a beggar on the side of the road, and he's like, man, I just need some money or some gold. And they're like, well, I don't have any of that, you know, because, you know, we're broke, man. But, hey, I give to you. Stand up and walk. Like, boom, that's really what the man wanted. Like, that's an answer to prayer right there. Immediate satisfaction. Didn't have to wait for it. That is awesome. But that's not always how it works. So today's principle, if you allow it, will transform your prayer life. Because what we often do is we read this part of the story and we're going like, yes, God, answer me from fire. You know, answer me immediately. Answer me in a visible way. But that doesn't show the whole story. So that's where our story then picks up. So Elijah dispatches with the prophets of Baal. He's won. The match is over, right? But technically, though, it's not completely over because what still hasn't happened? It still hasn't rained. Like, it's still dry. And crazy Elijah just poured out all the water. So now, in a weird way, we're worse off. Like, great, fire from heaven, but that's literally the opposite of what we need because fire isn't going to make my plants grow. Fire isn't going to feed my cows and feed my family. Nobody wants to eat a burger when the meat's dry. Like, fire is awesome, but we want and need water. And so Elijah knows this, and so he tells Ahab, so listen, Ahab, God's about to do something. He says this epic statement of faith. Elijah says to Ahab, get up, go eat and drink, for there is the sound of a rainstorm. There's not a cloud in the sky yet. Nothing has happened. Nothing is coming. It's still dry as it was. They're still picking dirt from out of their teeth because it's so dry. But go ahead, go get you something to drink, for there is a rainstorm. So Ahab went to eat and drink, but Elijah went up to the summit of Carmel, right back where he was, the same mountain. Y'all say the same mountain. The same day. Y'all say the same day, because this is a big deal. Y'all, we need to understand this. We've got to understand this. He went up back to the summit of Mount Carmel. He bent down on the ground and put his face between his knees. I don't know how to do that. That sounds really intense, some kind of weird yoga thing. But he became reverent before the Lord. And here's what's interesting. The prayer for fire, he didn't do none of that. Like, he was just like, do your thing, right? Boom, fire comes down. But now, he's having to change his pattern. And this is where it gets interesting. Then he said to his servant, he says, go up and look towards the sea. I'm like, yes, finally, here we go. A little bit of rain. This is what we've been praying for. I know God's going to send it. So he went up and he looked. And he saw a what? No, y'all read that wrong. It says the servant, he went up and he looked and he saw what? He saw? Nothing. Y'all are still reading that wrong. No. He went up and he looked and he said, God just answered the prayer for Elijah. What are y'all talking about? What did the servant see? He saw? Saw nothing. I think if we're honest, I know if I'm honest, I've gone to prayer a whole lot. And I left feeling like I have nothing. Anybody ever feel that way? You ever feel like when you're praying that your roof is all of a sudden 10 feet thick and made out of concrete? And you know what's even more frustrating? And if you've been a believer long enough, you probably experienced this, is that the day before, you could have had the best quiet time. The best worship at church, heard the greatest sermon. Man, I've had times when I'm worshiping in my car and like I'm so moved by the Spirit, but the next morning I get up and I'm praying about something serious and all I get is nothing. I wonder how many of us have left dreams that God has given us on the mountain because all we saw was nothing. Because I think in our world today, if it's not immediate, we take it as a no, don't we? If it's not right now, it's a no, never. And that's very dangerous when it comes to prayer and when it comes to us seeking the face of God. Because as we're about to see here, you may get nothing for a while. Because matter of fact, let's keep reading in verse 43. He said, then he said to the servant, go up and look towards the sea. So he went up and he looked and he said, there's nothing. So he has to come back. Now let's picture the poor servant guy. He's got to come back like, ooh, Elijah's not going to like this. I mean, I know this is gruesome, but you know what Elijah had just done? He had dispatched of with a sword the 450 false prophets of Baals. Different time, different area. But he had just, let's be honest, he had just killed 450 false worshipers of Baal who had tried to pull the people of Israel away from the one true God, and this poor servant guy has got to go back to Elijah and say, well, Elijah, if you want to get a suntan, it's a great day. That's all, you know, that's the best news I can give you. And so what does Elijah do? Elijah stays in the moment. He doesn't jump up and go, let me see. No, Elijah stays in that place of prayer. He says, go again. He goes again. Try number two. Boy, I really wish we had invented sunshades at this point. That's a bright sky. Let me go back. Tell Elijah no. Elijah, my man, you're praying mighty hard there. I don't know what's going on here. I think your prayers are broken because fire, one prayer, nothing, two prayers. Go back again. So he has to send the servant back again the third time. And see, I even wonder for some of us, like we kind of understand this principle in theory, but our go back again only lasts two or three times. And the fact is, what happens? How many times did the servant have to go back? How many?
Seven times.
If my kid doesn't listen to me by try number two, there's wrath, right? Amen, some parents. Like, don't make me tell you seven times. If I tell you seven times, that's my fault. Somebody didn't do something. But here's the Almighty God who sent down fire. And what did we say? Same mountain, same day, same Elijah, same dude praying. They didn't transfer prayers. Like, he's just not a good enough prayer. So what are we to take from this? What are we to pull from this? Well, first, if God has birthed something in your heart, you have to believe that nothing doesn't always mean nothing. And I know that sounds preachery. But nothing doesn't always mean nothing. Because what actually begins to happen? What do we begin to see? It says on verse 44, it says, on the seventh time. Say on the seventh time. Type in there, on the seventh time. You ever like, where do you find your keys? It's always the last place you look. On the seventh time, there's a cloud, he reported, as small as a man's hand coming up from the sea. Now yesterday I was outside, it was a beautiful day, hanging out with the kids. And I even looked up. There was some clouds and stuff. I looked up and said, you know, that's a small cloud. Like, that, none of us would look up and say, woo, you see that tiny itty bitty cloud over there? It's gonna rain. Now, I feel like that's sometimes what the weather people do. Ever notice that? Anyway, I would have been a great weather guesser. Love to get paid for that. But anyway, no fault to weather people, but I'm a good guesser too. Anyway, it almost seems insignificant, right? Like, it hasn't rained in 3 years. You mean the answer to prayer is a cloud the size of a hand in the distance? That could take hours to get here if it got here at all. A strong breeze could blow that away. But see, I wonder though, because when we get nothing, often we think that it's, well, it's nothing. But if God has birthed something in our heart and he's called us to pray about it, pray over it, then maybe it's just not for right now. It is for something in the future. Because I even wonder, like, man, in tribe one and two, maybe what God was doing outside of Elijah's vision, outside the servant's vision, is he was already beginning to have the water evaporate up out of a body of water. It might be coming from another land. But what would happen if Elijah had stopped? Like, I don't know. I guess I used all my prayer power up on that first one. It was impressive enough. I guess we're just not going to have any rain. And maybe on try three or four, maybe God was beginning to send that cloud over. That by the time he got to try six, which seems like an awful lot. Like, I think I could even see three tries. But seven? But then off in the distance, so small, so insignificant, God begins to bring a promise. See, Again, and I just want to hit this point home. Some of the biggest things that God will do in your life will start very small, very insignificant. And if you don't stay in that place of prayer and obedience, honestly, it'll die. You know, I'm reminded of, and just as a personal story, I'm reminded of my mother, who for years, felt the call to adopt children. She actually texted me after first service. She said, for 5 years, she held in her heart the call that God had placed on her, that our family was supposed to adopt and foster kids. That's a big call. That's a big, big deal. But nothing ever happened. Nothing ever worked out. And life kind of kept going on. But that little cloud, that little call, that little nothing yet stayed around for 5 years. But then it wasn't all just peaches and cream after that, because life is messy. Children are hard and difficult. And so when God finally begins to bring part of the promise, it wasn't always easy, and the pathway wasn't always easy. And so just because it shows up doesn't mean it's time to quit. That means when you dig down deep and your faith begins to grow. But now, so many years later, through so much heartache and pain and prayer, man, all of my siblings, all those that she had adopted, all that she brought into their home, they all serve Jesus. That she got to see the rainstorm and such a long drought. And that's just a small thing, but I want y'all to know, because in our world, if you expect God to answer you immediately, you will miss out on most things. Like, that's just not how it works. A good saying would be like this: God doesn't work in days or weeks. He works in seasons of life. And see, some of y'all are in the middle of a season. You've been praying, and my heart is there with you because I've been there too. And you keep going up to the mountain, and you look, and like, God, show me something. And what do you get? You get a whole bunch of nothing again. But that doesn't mean that God isn't moving, that he's not on your behalf, that he's still for you, and you just keep going back to that thing. It doesn't matter if it takes 20 times. If God has promised it, if he has birthed it in your heart, you just keep praying. And he will bring it about at the right time. He will bring it about in that right season. He will bring you through it and bring it to you when you're ready and mature enough to receive it. And this is hard stuff. But if you want to be a prayer that sees your prayers make a difference, you have to remember that just because we ask him once doesn't mean that's going to be it. Now, I will say for clarity's sake that sometimes God absolutely answers those like he did with Elijah. Like I believe that happens. Man, I've experienced it. You've probably experienced it if you've been serving the Lord long enough, that sometimes, man, God's answers are immediate. But oftentimes they're not. And oftentimes it comes through sweat and tears and anguish. I even think of the birth of this church. Oh, man, the stories that Pastor Artie and other leaders can share about. Here's a good one. For almost a year, he loves to tell the story. You've probably heard it before. But for almost a year, God called him to almost just be quiet before purchasing this building. And everybody thought he was nuts, and everybody thought he was crazy, and we didn't know what we were going to do because we were outgrowing that space over there on Wellington. If you were around back then, you can remember that. We had to ask people to come to different services because we couldn't fit people, and had people leaving because they couldn't sit with their families. And he was just praying and crying out and trying to find a solution. And he's, you know, in that year, it's like it seemed so far off that nothing was happening. But God doesn't work in days or weeks. He works in seasons. God's plans are so much bigger and broader. And so we have to learn this compounding effect of prayer, this delayed gratification idea of prayer. So I want to bring this to a close here. What do we take from the story? What do we now need to take away and implement into our prayer lives today? And it is this. Number one, there is no one way God answers prayers. There is no one way God answers prayers. And see, this is what I fear for a lot of us, and this is what I have felt in my life too. Social media, You know, there's an Instagram version of prayer, right? You know, it's so easy to see God answering other people's prayers, and it seems like they're having that Elijah on the mountain experience the first time around, and he can begin to think like, well, God, why are you not answering my prayers? Why are you leaving me out to dry? I'm in a drought. I'm in a desert over here. I've been praying for rain for weeks, for months, for years, and you're not answering my prayers, and Miss So-and-so or dude so-and-so over there, they're getting all their prayers answered, but first, you don't even know if that's actually an answer to prayer. Number two, you don't know how many times they've gone to the mountain. They might have been going to that mountain 20, 30 times. You might be seeing the culmination of half their life. And so we need to be careful judging like we do with all other things, judging families, judging success on jobs. Listen, what you see on the internet is mostly false. Or it's a curated view of another person's relationship with God. And honestly, it's dangerous if you begin to buy into that. I've seen it with other church leaders or pastors. Like, man, look what God's doing there. But I don't know the work that they put in to get them to that place. So don't discredit what God is doing for you. You stay humble. You stay hungry. And if you got to keep going back, go back. Go back. Go back to that place. Don't let a string of lousy quiet times discourage you from going to the throne of grace to be in relationship with Jesus. I have been in seasons where prayer was boring, where I would rather have done anything but, because I just felt so dry. But I just know from my life and experience, the time when God moves in me the most, when he moves on my behalf the most, for whatever reason, is always on the tail end of those seasons when I have been disciplined and obedient to seek his face. That I remember that he won't answer me like he did the last time. Because God's not a vending machine. He's not some kind of prayer genie. And you know why I think the story is here? So we can say that there's no one way God answers prayers, because if he answered it like fire, like he did the first time, it wouldn't take any faith. It wouldn't take any relationship. It wouldn't take any trust. But when you keep going to that mountain and you look and like, God, I don't see anything yet, but I know you're still working on my behalf. I know that this thing that you've birthed in me, it's been 2 years, God, but it's still burning in me the same today as it was 2 years ago. God, I know I've only made a few steps forward. God, I know that it seems small, but whenever you think that about it being small, you need to remember a story in the New Testament when it seems like God, what he's doing seems so small and insignificant in your life. You need to remember the story of when Jesus was on a hillside teaching a large group of people, 4,000 or 5,000 people. And dinner time comes. And I don't know if y'all have tried to feed a bunch of people before, but it's not an easy thing to do. And there was no catering services. So he goes around and asks his disciples, hey, these people are hungry. What are we going to do? And the disciples are like, I don't know. Send them home, I guess. Too far. He says, go look. Look around to see what we have to feed these people with. You know what they came back saying? Lord, there's nothing. Don't you use that word. Don't you use that word with me, says Jesus. Bring me what you have. And he brings a little boy's lunch, like a Lunchable, like a first century Lunchable, right? Some fish and some bread. But it's impressive what God can do with nothing, huh? So he takes that nothing, he takes that little something, he takes that insignificant amount, and he multiplies it, and he grows it until everybody is fed, and there's enough left to feed a small city again. So don't you ever believe the lie that small beginning, that small vision that God is birthing in your heart is nothing. And don't you ever believe that when you look out, and even you think you see nothing, don't you believe that it's nothing. That cloud could be on the way. And leads us to the second thing. If you are praying about something God has placed in you, do not stop. Don't stop. Don't stop. And I don't care if you're 20 or 80, don't stop.